Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, June 6th, 2011. Tech News Today is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies streamed to your PC, Mac, or TV instantly. Plus, get DVDs by mail in about a business day. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. Bienvenidos to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zaktar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And it is Announcement Monday.
It is, yes.
What are we announcing?
Well, E3 is on, so Microsoft had their announcement this morning. Sony's got an announcement later today, Nintendo tomorrow. And also, Apple kicked off the Worldwide Developers Conference, their Worldwide Developers Conference, at Moscone Center here in San Francisco with a big announcement this morning.
But we have no announcements, personally.
Well,
that was our announcement.
We're announcement regurgitators.
Not one that you know of, no.
Not yet.
You'll find out at the end of the show.
After the show. Thanks, pal.
Everybody, it may or may not involve a pink slip.
Enjoy IAS today. Okay, that's all I'm saying. No, I can't.
I hardly enjoy me at all, so forget it.
All right, we will talk about the WWDC, but just for a change of pace, let's start in chronological order.
Yeah.
Microsoft had their announcement at 9:30 a.m.
So they get to come first.
They
on
get
the
to
show.
Go first.
Okay.
It was a typically long E3 announcement. The biggest news that everybody seems to be talking about is Xbox 360 will be getting live TV in the fall. In the United States, this is something they've had in Australia already. The announcement says it will have a DVR feature. It will be live television provided by a cable-type company. Their partners include Sky in the UK, Foxtel in Australia, who they've already partnered with for a version of this service, and Canal Plus in France. There is no U.S. partner announced yet. But they have worked with the AT&T U-verse in the past to make Xbox 360 work as a set-top box. So it would make sense that U-verse might be the first people they partner with for this, although they say they want to have multiple partners.
The thing is, Microsoft hasn't given a lot of details about what exactly or how exactly this plan is going to be, whether your ISP and your cable provider have to be the same thing. It looks like your ISP could be completely different from their cable partner. So hopefully that'd give us a lot more options in the States and around the world.
Yeah, it'd be great. I mean, right now, we talked about this a little bit last week. Right now, I only have Comcast. That's my only choice at home. So I was like, hey, if I could get some sort of a Microsoft cable subscription, that could be cool. At least I would enjoy other options, especially if I could separate the ISP and cable service.
I think the most important part of this announcement, folks in the UK, Australia, and France can point at us and laugh that they get something first.
Finally.
Usually we get the emails saying that we shouldn't.
We have Hulu, but you can point at us.
We have no Spotify. We have no Xbox Live TV. Voice control of the system will be expanded. They're going to have a Bing app that you can control with your voice. They also showed off a YouTube app, YouTube coming to Xbox. It seems to be pretty much everywhere else, so it should come to the Xbox.
Right.
Also, Ultimate Fight Club. Or is it Ultimate Fight Championship?
Ultimate Fighting Championship.
Ultimate Fight is something we don't talk about. I apologize.
I don't know why you keep saying that.
Second rule of UFC.
Ultimate Fight Championship.
It should be on Xbox. Ultimate Fight Club.
Ultimate Fight Championship getting an app. I guess that's similar to like the ESPN 360 app, right?
Well, the fact that Bing is coming to 360 with voice control seems like it could be really useful because there's Netflix and there's Hulu and then you have live TV. It'd be nice to go, okay, I want to watch this show, Xbox. Just find it. Like, I don't want to. I don't even
Except
care.
Except that by okay, it'll get confused and launch something that you don't want it to launch. Because it doesn't understand things like, okay, I'm in the mood for.
Well, maybe it could do that. I don't know how their voice recognition is going to be, actually.
They also made a big deal about motion control, Madden, NFL, FIFA World Cup, Tiger Woods, PGA Tour, Mass Effect 3, Forza Motorsport, Fable, The Journey. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on about the Kinect-enabled games. The big announcements game-wise, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, they actually started the keynote with live gameplay, which personally I found a little drawn out.
Although some
but a lot of people
were
very excited.
Really ranting and raving over how beautiful it looked and how great the graphics were. So,
Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 launching on November 8th. Halo 4, starring Master Chief. Master Chief actually showing up in a Halo video game. Imagine. It will be coming end of next year. It's part of the first part of a trilogy. An enhanced remake of the original Halo called Halo Combat Evolved will launch on November 15th this year. And Mass Effect 3 is the other one that people that Kinect enabled. Mass Effect 3 releasing March 6th of 2012.
So thanks to this Kinect adaptations, now people get injured in their living room a lot easier, I think, when they're doing barrel rolls and,
absolutely,
and they're playing football and football, you know, soccer.
Another, they give demos of all of this stuff and people get all excited. They also gave a demo of a new Tomb Raider game, which if we can get the audio to launch here shortly.
Yeah, last week they showed off a Tomb Raider trailer where we just saw the storyline. But this time they showed actual gameplay and there was a bit of noise about the noise involved.
She's being attacked.
Yeah, she's like trapped. It's very claustrophobic kind of a situation that she's in, and she's sort of grunting and upset and not doing well. And it sounds like something else that sounds...
It doesn't sound like she's
sexy.
Yeah. Or like that.
Right.
It's like that, is it?
And now, if you're watching it, obviously you get the context. Some folks who were at the announcement said, hey, if you close your eyes, this could be a whole different thing.
Yeah, if you're listening to this in the office,
my neighbor a little bit better.
Finally, something that actually wasn't in the announcement, it was put out as a press release afterwards, at least that's the way I saw it, cloud storage for game saves and live profiles. So if you're over at somebody's house playing Xbox and you're logged in, you can save your game progress and then pick it up on another Xbox, whether it's yours at home or anywhere else that that you log in. And beacons, which allow you to not only say what you're playing, but what you want to play, and get your friends that you've connected with on Xbox Live to say, oh, hey, you want to play Modern Warfare 4? Or whatever. Mass Effect 3, let's do it. Let's start right now.
Well, I like the whole cloud storage thing. The old days, you used to have to carry around like a memory card. You remember that? You used to go around and go, okay, I'm storing it to my memory card. Don't lose that particular PS1 memory card. That's way back. So cloud storage is a nice progression in the future.
All right, speaking of cloud storage.
What could you possibly be transitioning to?
Google finally gave Iaz his Google Music account.
I can't wait to upload my 6 gigabytes. Only 6 gigabytes of music.
On the same day that Apple's WWDC announcement had to do with a lot of cloud stuff.
Oh, yeah, now, the other cloud thing.
We've got OS X Lion, iOS 5, and iCloud to talk about here. Do you care which ones we start with?
No.
Let's start with OS X Lion. It's the briefest of the announcements. It's going to have some touch gestures, which are nice. Some cool things in pages that allow for versioning, mail search, and conversations. It's coming in July, so we're going to get OS X Lion soon. A nice dashboard feature for the App Store, for the Mac App Store. If you want to see all the apps, you just do a little gesture on your touchpad. It brings up all the apps that you have. Exposé is now fused with Spaces for something they call Mission Control. To provide you a better way to handle all of the apps that you've got running at one time, and you can move things into spaces, kind of visually separate stuff. And it will only be $30 and only available through the Mac App Store.
So if you're running older versions of Leopard, so Leopard and under, you have to upgrade to Snow Leopard first via like a CD or DVD, mm-hmm. and then you get the Mac App Store, because the App Store does not work on Leopard. Then you have to pay, I think Snow Leopard was $30, and this is another $30. It seems like a good deal.
Still cheaper than Windows, which is $100 out the gate.
You're saying it's only a 4 gigabyte download, though. So, I mean, how big a jump is this? And at $30, they're saying, oh, yeah, our upgrades used to cost $129.
Well, what they say is you need 4 gigabytes of storage. The download may be bigger. You just need 4 gigabytes of storage available to start it, and then they may overwrite stuff. I'm not sure. You know, there's ways of handling that. I like the fact that I can get it through the Mac App Store. I think some people, especially people on Leopard, are going to be upset that they can only get it on the Mac App Store. And I want to know what my backup options are for it. OS X's disk is kind of the go-to fix everything when you're having a problem. Boot off the install disk and
that's a good point.
And that see what happens.
I'm thinking that I bet there'll be a download you could have for a USB stick for certain kinds of, like the disk utility when you run into that problem on OS X. And you know how Apple loves throwing out things like, I don't know, disk drives? I mean, this makes it a lot easier for either MacBook Pros and MacBook Airs to get closer, because you can just download your OS instead of having to get that DVD into your slot-loading drive.
Apple's Scott Forstall also was on stage demoing iOS 5. He showed off 10 different features. They've got a new notification center, very similar to Android. Introduced Newsstand for magazines and newspapers, similar to iBooks.
I love this idea. I download a lot of magazine apps. I'm into it. But they do tend to get lost, and I don't necessarily want should just create folders and call it like the magazine folder in iOS. So I like actually putting them in their own category because I feel like they're different than a lot of the other apps that I use regularly.
Twitter integration into iOS. You can just log in settings and then Twitter is accessible safely, they say, from any app. Safari gets tabs.
It's been so dangerous up until now.
Well, you don't want some app stealing your identity.
Yeah.
Safari has tabs. iOS 5.
That's cool.
Some apps already had that. Like, I think Mercury browser.
Yeah, but that makes
that.
A big
pretty
deal.
Pretty much all of them have that, except Safari.
I like the way this tab. Some of those tabs are weird the way they work.
Some
in
of
these
them are very
parties.
Ugly.
This is Safari, so your default browser. And on the think of it on the iPad now with tabs that work exactly the way they work on Safari on your laptop.
So that means it's not like reloading the page. It's actually still back.
Exactly. So fast switching. One of my big bugaboos on using the iPad for productivity. Seems like it might be taken care of. They've got a task list thing called Reminders, which is, you know, not just the Jay-Z song, but also the ability to give you alerts when stuff that you want to happen happens. And it syncs with iCal as well. The camera's going to open faster, and they've made the volume up button able to take a picture.
You don't have to use the thing. People might remember that Camera Plus, a very popular app, something I use quite often, was initially yanked from the App Store because this was sort of an Easter egg that they had provided for folks, and Apple said, you can't do that. This is, you know, these are not within our terms of service of something that you can offer people, and now they're doing the same thing.
Mail gets some tweaks, like draggable addresses. Everybody was crazy about Windows 8 showing the thumb keyboards, the keyboards that were separated to be by your thumbs.
And Honeycomb already had that, too.
So, and Honeycomb has that. Now iOS 5 is going to get that, too. The biggest announcement, I think, for iOS was wireless sync. They call it PC free, but you can set up and activate a device straight out of the box without hooking it up to a computer. Software updates can come over the air, and they update only what's changed in iOS. So they're smaller than they would be normally.
Yeah, Forstall actually referenced something that Steve Jobs said a while ago. This is a post-PC era, but when you look at an iPad and you'd say, sync it to a PC, and you could never do anything with that. I know one of my relatives wanted to get an iPad. I'm like, well, do you have a computer? Can you sync it up? And they're like, why would I have to do that? And getting rid of that step is going to get a lot more iPads, I think, in a lot more households.
Game Center gets some achievement points, some more social stuff. iMessage is the new version of Messages, comes to the iPad, and anybody with an iOS-based device can now message each other over Wi-Fi.
Do you think it's strange that they broke out FaceTime from iChat, effectively, and then they broke out text messages from iChat? Why are there so many different applications to talk to each other in just the Apple universe? Why can't you just have one application?
Well, blink. I mean, one of the things about iMessages that I think
why would
is
they
interesting.
Do that? It makes sense.
I don't know.
A lot of folks were kind of scoffing at iMessage, saying, so it's just, you know, it's like BlackBerry Messenger where people can only talk to each other if they have Apple devices. Ugh, this is so Apple. But it's like, well, that's exactly what I'm using with services like GroupMe or Beluga, or they're non-SMS based apps where you effectively just text message and you can send pictures back and forth and that sort of thing. They're just building something internal because they know that people like these services.
Probably the iOS club.
Yeah. AirPlay, I don't really see how it's that different.
AirPlay will allow you to mirror wirelessly from iPad to TV, and you'll be able to Wi-Fi sync to iTunes without having to plug in your iOS device.
That can take a while, though.
Two big things that folks were excited for. It might take a while the first time, but if you're not actually, you know, if you're able to keep synced, it won't take that long.
I hope that podcast syncs properly.
Yeah, that
should drive me crazy because you have to go back. And
developers get iOS today, and it's coming to consumers this fall. They didn't give a date. If you have the iPhone 3GS and up, you can get it. Third generation and fourth generation of iPod Touch and all iPads. That means both of them, iPad 1 and iPad 2. And the big news was iCloud. This is a free replacement for Mobile Me, so they won't be charging for it anymore, but it works a little differently. It's not going to be an iDisk, it doesn't seem like, anymore. You're going to get 5 gigabytes of storage. So the storage amount goes down. That 5 gigabytes is for contacts, calendar, and mail. They've tweaked those, so hopefully they'll work a little better. App Store is added now to iCloud. So you buy once, it downloads everywhere. And if you look at your App Store today, you can see a purchase history. So it just makes it easier to find the stuff you've purchased and download it. That purchase history also comes to iTunes today. In fact, I've got it on my...
I couldn't get mine to show up.
I got it on my iPhone.
For me.
Yeah.
I have a...
Works for everybody but me.
Can't really see it there, but...
I'm not sure if it's rolling out slowly to folks or why I'm not seeing it. I have the download.
I had to relaunch iTunes. I closed iTunes and relaunched it.
I did that too.
But right now, Just an Island Girl by Veronica, something I bought on my iPad over the weekend while I was listening to Native FM from the Big Island of Hawaii.
Yes.
And I have not added it to my iPhone, so there we go. It says downloaded. Wow, that was fast.
Was it magical and
that's
revolutionary
not real.
Just now?
That was already cached. That can't be.
Try a different song then.
Boom, it just works. Says, it's,
they did say that phrase a
it
lot.
It just works a little faster than it.
Maybe it's prefetching. It could be prefetching.
Let's try CeeLo.
Yeah.
CeeLo requires me to put in my password because it has a dirty word in the title.
That's why?
No.
Really?
And it says downloaded. No, it's not downloaded. It's downloading. Yeah.
Downloaded-ing.
There we go. Now that looks normal. I think that other song may have already been on here somehow through a sync or something. Anyway.
Huh.
So dun, dun, dun.
Nice conspiracy. Done. Anyway, that leads us, of course, to the one more thing, which was iTunes Match. So you have this iTunes ability to re-download songs you've purchased from iTunes. What about the songs you didn't purchase from iTunes? Your CD rips, things you've gotten from Amazon. iTunes Match will scan all of your non-iTunes music, match it with songs that they already have in the store, and immediately put them in your account. So no upload for those songs. Any songs that you have, maybe stuff you've recorded yourself, will be uploaded. But the key is, for those, you have to pay $25 a year for the service. So you're paying for a locker service for anything that you didn't purchase from iTunes. They're monetizing piracy. They're saying, look, we're not saying this, but we're not going to ask where you got those songs. We're going to take $25 to store them. And part of that $25, you know, is going to the recording industry.
The potentially worrying thing about this, though, is that they're not asking questions now about the music you already have. And they're also not asking questions about the music that you could continue to get in that way, right? I mean, for someone who's already used to pirating all their music, there's absolutely no incentive for them to now start buying music if they're legitimized by the fact that they can download it and just have it matched on iTunes.
And pay $25 a year is still a lot less than buying all those albums.
But the stats right now show music piracy declining significantly. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, there was a story out today saying YouTube is the reason that people don't pirate music because they can get any song they want just by a search on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So why would you download stuff? RDO, Pandora, all of those on-demand services make it much easier. So I don't think the industry's as worried about piracy. The question is, if I look at it this way, will I go, hey, maybe I'll go back to piracy because I can just pay, you know, the $25 a year and feel good about it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess some people would think that. I think probably the recording industry is like, listen, we've lost so much money, in their mind anyway, and this is a way to get some of that money back.
In which case, this is bigger than just iTunes having a cool feature. This is like the industry changing their thinking entirely on piracy.
Well, maybe. In Twit's earlier coverage today of the news, the question is, well, are they going to find that you pirated something? Are they going to charge you with pirating now?
Pull the rug out from under your feet.
Hey, we got a couple of you.
That's tinfoil hat stuff. Yeah. They're not going to bother with that.
But do read the EULA. I'm really concerned about
it. Do read it closely. And it is out, too. You can read it. Also, wireless backup gives you iPhone wireless restore. So when you buy a new iPhone, you can immediately restore it to the same over-the-air wirelessly restore it to the same state as your previous iPhone. You can restore purchased music, apps, books, camera roll, settings, app data. There's also a photo stream that keeps the last 1,000 songs available to just stream. I'm sorry, last 1,000 photos to available to stream to your iOS devices. Also built into Apple TV. Apple TV doesn't have a lot of storage for photos, so you can stream them.
And also work with Mac and PCs, too, because Mac, you can get it via iPhoto and PCs via the Pictures folder. So that's a nice thing. If you don't like syncing your phone with your actual personal computer, you can have your photos right over there.
Documents in the cloud, Pages, Numbers, and Keynote will actually be able to save their versions to the cloud, and iCloud storage API for apps will allow apps to take advantage of that kind of storage facility as well. I skipped this in OS X, but another thing they're doing with the cloud storage over there is when you close, it's not cloud storage, but when you close an app, it will save the state. So you can when you reopen an app the next time, it will pick up right where you left off. They're adding that to iBooks as well. They've got a WhisperSync-like thing where you're reading an iBook. It will save the page, and when you go to another iOS device, you'll be able to pick up right from that page, something that Amazon has been doing for a while. So, okay, this is out for developers in beta today. iOS 4.3 it now has iTunes Cloud, so you can take advantage of that today. iCloud will ship in full with iOS 5 this fall.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a revolutionary announcement? Is this magical?
You know,
this just works automatically.
One of the things that I noticed a lot of other people talking about it, and what I was thinking is, you know, what about all of these? You guys hearing that?
Yes.
I don't think the stream can, so just go.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Just a little.
It's just our headphone
internal
app.
Feedback here in the studio. Are the independent developers who have made great products that people love that now iOS 5 will incorporate internally? For example, reading things later from within Safari. That's Instapaper, but it's Apple made. A lot of people use Instapaper. Not everybody. I mean, I still think that Instapaper is kind of a geeky tool that a lot of folks don't really know how to use or understand why it's helpful. But if it's native within Safari, maybe they will a little bit more. Is this Apple just kind of FUing a lot of independent? I mean, we've had this conversation with Twitter, for example. Twitter's another really good example of they end up building features because the features are really popular and users really like them. And then third-party developers are like left in the cold. I don't know. I'm
tired of this argument, honestly. It's like, you know what? People are going to make stuff, and people are going to make similar stuff. And just because you came up with an app doesn't prevent Apple.
Right.
It's the same argument I have from saying why Apple shouldn't be blocking apps from the App Store that mimic their own functionality.
Right.
That's something they kind of use very... I think they use it very frivolously to block apps they don't like, because there's plenty of apps that are allowed that duplicate functionality. And I don't think they should do that either. So it's like, you know what? It's an open marketplace. Let people make the stuff they make.
Mm-hmm.
If Apple's going to, you know, if you had a good idea and Apple incorporates it, if you've got a patent on it, then maybe you can go after them that way. But if you don't, then it's open season.
Yeah, like OS X, they integrated widgets. Remember that? And there used to be this thing called Confabulator. People used to run that all the time. I used to run it. Then when Dashboard came out, there was really no reason to go back and download another mm-hmm. program. So I can see a bunch of developers getting a little annoyed, but they probably will move over onto something else. Or there's this theoretical, I think it was the guy who made Instapaper was talking about like a halo effect. People might want to check out Read It Later or Instapaper more because of this feature now.
Because Apple's showing
a lot of, hey, look, we can do this. Well, now either Instapaper's got to get better or it's going to get killed.
I think that's the key. Mm-hmm. All these apps are like, hey, they stole our function. Do it better. I mean, that's how OS X, Windows, Linux, that's how they all compete. They don't say, hey, you're also doing an operating system. Stop that.
iOS 5 is like catching up to a lot of things I saw on Android. The notification system. Hey, a pull-down little drawer. That looks really familiar. I think I saw that on Android from the first day. So everyone's going to keep borrowing ideas and stealing ideas, whatever you want to call it. But flat out, whoever does it the best is going to win on this.
That's true. I mean, that's a good point. I'm not going to stop using Instagram just because I have easier functionality from within the camera app to upload a picture quickly. I like my community over Instagram. I like my filters and so on and so forth.
Let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Netflix, delivering movies directly to your home, saving you time, money, and hassle. You can instantly watch thousands of TV episodes streamed directly to your PC or your Mac, or stream to your TV via Netflix-ready device like an Xbox 360, like a PS3, like a Nintendo Wii. And you get DVDs by mail in about a business day. We were catching up on Buffy the Vampire Slayer over the weekend.
So I hear.
And started watching Angel as well. And what was great is we have a Google TV in the bedroom and a Roku player in the main room. So it was easy to just kind of flip back and forth no matter which room we were using. Be like, and it shows you.
You just were like, let's go into the bedroom for the next episode. Why not? We can.
You know, it's getting late.
Yeah.
Yeah. It might get a little sleepy towards the end. Might as well get in there. And so, you know, you stop on one place and you see in the Netflix app, oh, I already watched that one. This is the next one I need to watch. It's very easy, very convenient. Check it out for 30 days for free. Or if you're like, I already have Netflix, sorry, I'd like to help Twit, but I already have it. Introduce it to a friend, a neighbor, grandma and grandpa, mom and dad.
They might not even know their device supports Netflix because Netflix is on everything.
Check it out. You get it 30 days for free when you go to netflix.com/twit, and we thank them for their support. Other things outside of E3 and the WWDC going on today. Yes, no, there really were. Sony hacks.
For example.
You talked about that already, right?
Yeah. No, these are new. Let's start. Let me run through this real quick. Friday, LulzSec published data claimed to be from the Atlanta chapter of InfraGuard, a security group operated by the FBI. Then Saturday, Nintendo's American website servers were hacked. Lulzsec claims responsibility. Nintendo admitted that there was a hack, but they claimed no customer info was stolen. Also Saturday, a Lebanese hacker working under the name IDAC claims to have used a rudimentary SQL injection technique to acquire a database of Sony users. And then the Lulzsec hacker group today released what it describes as a 54 megabytes of source code from the Sony Computer Entertainment Developer Network, as well as internal network maps of Sony BMG. Sony Pictures Russia and Sony Music Brazil also attacked. And this brings the number of attacks to 16, according to the hacks listed on attrition.org.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I don't know what else to say.
I don't want to say anything because I don't want to get hacked.
Nobody wants to get hacked, but this is getting really prevalent. I'm not even sure how bad it is because these are a lot lower level than the PlayStation Network.
It's just getting reported on. I just got an email right before the show that a Nidian social network called Ravelry had emailed all their users saying we had some usernames, email addresses, possible passwords taken. It is prevalent, but it's also getting a lot more attention than it would have a few months ago.
These are SQL injection attacks on websites, which are not uncommon.
Right.
Yeah. I got an email from Gearbox saying, hey, next time you log in to Gearbox for your Duke Nukem preview, mm-hmm. you're going to be asked to change your password. It's just nothing to worry about, just security. I'm like, did you get hacked? You got hacked, didn't
right.
you? You just don't want to admit it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they did, but it just seems like the way of things these days. On a more serious note, China, in a war of implications with companies and officials in the United States, we've been covering this for days now, but just today, the People's Daily, a newspaper published by the Communist Party of China, ran a front-page editorial charging that Google slandered the country last week by implying that China was responsible for Gmail hacks. They called Google a political tool. Meanwhile, CNET running a story by Eleanor Mills saying several security researchers told them that the RSA-powered attacks against Lockheed, Northrop Grumman, and L3 are linked to China. These are all Advanced Persistent Threats, or APTs, and Rich Mogul, chief executive of Securosis, says APT is a euphemism for China. There's a massive espionage campaign being waged by a country. It's been going on for years, and it's going to continue. Also, there were implications that the cyber war declaration by the Pentagon a while back has to do with sending a message about these sort of attacks. And Chris Weissopel, chief technology officer at Veracode, says if it's any kind of military espionage, military adversaries are going to be high on the list. The question then is, who in China is doing this? Is it government agents? Is it independent contractors selling to the Chinese government? He's casting a little doubt on whether it's the Chinese government for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly attacks are coming from China, whether they're routed through there or done by people in China.
Yeah, it just seems like China and the U.S. are kind of sparring back and forth, saying, okay, we know what you're doing. We know what you're doing. They keep going back and forth until there probably some very uneasy accord will happen for a while to make sure things are going fine. Because if the whole, I mean, China's been lending money to the United States for a very long time. This could be a reason they're doing this whole potential. I don't know if they did this, the actual hacking of all these military contractors. So they're probably just keeping tabs on each other. This stuff's probably happening all the time. We just don't see it. But
it's making the news because it's becoming a diplomatic battle between the United States, Google, and China. China doesn't really care about Google search, but they do care about Android. Tons of Chinese phones run on Android, and they need Google for that. So it's not like they can just kick Google out, but they don't like Google pointing the finger, so every time Google points the finger, I see Larry Page's finger doing the pointing.
But they think that Google's a political tool of the United States. I mean, Google's done a lot of things or said a lot of things in public.
Probably made the U.S. cringe.
Yeah, drove them crazy. So yeah. I don't know how much of a political tool. Google, sometimes people think of them as their own country. I mean, they do whatever they want, whenever they want, and they play by their own rules.
All right. The recording industry has changed its mind on three strikes copyright laws, sort of.
That's the headline.
At least that's a headline. The Sydney Morning
well,
Herald.
That was fast.
Yeah.
Remember last week we were like, they don't have to do anything about it.
You guys were kind of hard on the United Nations there.
We weren't hard on them. I think it was important to point out that just because a report gets released, it doesn't mean that France has to say, okay, no more three strikes. Right. You're right.
Last week we reported that the UN had adopted a report that cutting off internet access for people who had violated, I believe, music piracy or movie piracy mm-hmm. laws.
Was
that,
a violation
of human rights.
Right. And the point of that was never to get people to change their laws. The point of that was to kick off the debate. To get people thinking about this and talking about it again.
To eventually get people to change their laws.
Down the road. Yeah. But it wasn't like the UN thought, oh, if we put out this statement, everybody will change their laws.
It was the beginning of
a larger discussion.
And that larger discussion has caused Australian copyright enforcement group MIPI, the Music Industry Piracy Investigations Agency, to say, we support mitigation measures for dealing with persistent illegal file sharers. Such measures would not include termination of internet accounts. So they have changed their mind. They say, you know what, we're not for the three strikes law anymore. At least that according to General Manager Sabine Heindel, talking to the Sydney Morning Herald. Film studios have not changed their mind in Australia. The Australian Federation Against Copyright Theft, AFACT, nice little acronym there, are still backing the controversial measures. They think that three strikes laws are necessary to combat piracy.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a music industry or the movie industry here. It just sounds strange. Like a three strike, this is going to actually prevent people from breaking the rules if we cut off internet access. Isn't that a little severe?
That's an old argument.
It's
the weird thing here is that the music industry is saying, you know, we don't believe in three strikes anymore.
MIPI is one part of the
MIPI is an independent organization backed by record labels and Australia's Recording Industry Association, the ARIA. Okay. So MIPI is saying, look, we're the people charged with stopping copyright infringement. We don't think three strikes is effective anymore. We don't think we should do that.
If they support mitigation measures for persistent illegal file sharers, so it's like people who they believe are doing this over and over, then what mitigation measures do they support if it's not termination of internet accounts?
Well, you could do lots of punishments that aren't cut off your internet.
You could just be spying
just
on them.
Fines.
Mm-hmm. They could be...
That's actually probably what they would prefer.
There could be surveillance.
Money.
There could be a $25 a year iCloud fee.
Yeah, most of them are probably fines, but you could mm-hmm. even do all kinds of weird things like have a parole officer you have to check in on who looks at your computer files or something.
Yeah.
Who knows? I mean, but they're saying, look, don't cut off the phone service because somebody used a phone to commit a crime.
Correct.
Maybe you throw them in jail when they can't use the phone anymore, but you don't just cut off their service. This is a finable offense. Heindel was also speaking on behalf of the Australian Content Industry Group, which includes MIPI and the book, computer, software, and video game industries. So a small voice, but an interesting one so soon after that UN opinion. Finally, the Motorola Droid 3 has leaked out a few details in tutorial vids. Videos found on YouTube on Sunday, according to a blog called PhonePad. They actually posted up the videos. And in it, you can see that it's an 8-megapixel camera, because they talk about it. They're tutorial videos. They're telling you how to use the camera and everything. Also capable of 1080p HD video recording. So if you're excited about the Droid 3, you get an early look at it.
Yeah, it's some really lax security, apparently. Motorola Droid 3 just leaking out. Lots of videos. Not just one. There's at least three out there that you can watch and see how this thing actually operates.
So it's actually Verizon's tutorial videos. They just got published in advance somehow.
What about Verizon? Do you think Verizon leaked it?
Accident. Do you think it's an on-purpose leak?
Microsoft's all over the news. Apple's in the news. And how could we possibly get the Motorola Droid 3 in the press?
Leak? Yeah, quite possible. Time now for the news views.
As if we didn't have enough Apple.
I know. I was waiting for that one.
In-game purchases on multiple game platforms can be problematic since so many platforms have proprietary credit systems. Ubisoft VP of Digital Publishing Chris Early has said that Apple and Facebook will honor currency purchased on each other's platforms for the same game as long as it costs the same for the consumer on all platforms. So the cost of the game has to be the equivalent in Facebook credits or iTunes points or whatever. I expect to see this system in place for Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon.
A startup called Backplane is grabbing some headlines. And if you don't know about Backplane, it has yet to launch. Its goals, creating communities around sports, teams, and musicians. Okay, that's nice. But what's really grabbing people's attention are the investors, Eric Schmidt's Tomorrow Ventures, and 20% owner of Backplane, Lady Gaga, which is an odd couple, but, you know.
But a happy couple.
Imagine the new single, Backplane.
By Eric Schmidt in his meat dress.
Your IPO face.
Last Friday, two-thirds of Syria were without internet service. On Saturday, service was restored, but there has not been any official comment given by the Syrian government for the outage. The popular theory is that Syrian officials shut down the internet to disrupt protesters, but that has yet to be confirmed.
At least they got it back. Mm-hmm. Google recently announced it was ending support for a bunch of its APIs, including Google Translate. We talked about that, but don't cry for Translate, Argentina, or any of the rest of you. Just yet, Google announced it is developing a plan to turn the Translate API into a paid version. So if developers still want to use Google Translate, they can. It's just going to cost you. Google decided to kill the free version of the API due to extensive abuse. People were looking up swear words in other languages, stuff like that.
So how are Windows Phone 7 devices selling on AT&T, you might wonder? According to AT&T Mobility CEO Ralph De La Vega, not so good.
That guy.
De La Vega said that sales were not really what Microsoft nor AT&T had hoped. He didn't go into any specific numbers, but perhaps the Mango update would give Microsoft the boost they would like?
Yeah, we're not going to catch Verizon for 2 or 3 years. Yeah. Windows phones aren't selling.
He's like one of the RIM CEOs.
He's doing the undersell so that he can... He can
keep his job.
Yeah.
Facebook went on the offensive against Paul Seglia, the man who claims dealings with the college-aged Mark Zuckerberg made him a 50% owner of Facebook. This time, Facebook called in linguistics experts to examine emails allegedly written by Zuckerberg. The expert says that the real Mark Zuckerberg knows how to use apostrophes correctly opens his sentences rather informally compared to the alleged emails offered by Seglia.
That's how you know it's not a fake email for me if they use commas correctly. Or spell things right. Apple may have believed its tops in the smartphone market. They tried to make it look like that today at their WWDC keynote.
We're the best.
But it's not the case, according to ComScore. A new report says Android is still the king, holding 36.4% of mobile subscribers in April. On the handset side, Samsung rules the roost with a total of 24.5% of the market in April's ComScore surveyed over 30,000 U.S. subscribers.
Does ComScore make any other surveys besides this one? Because I feel they release this survey 3 times a week.
No, because Net Applications releases one, and then Nielsen releases one, and then they're not all from ComScore.
So I'm just blaming ComScore.
They're nearby.
Some of it.
Yeah,
I guess it just seems to be a very popular survey.
The amount of surveys ComScore gives.
iCloud isn't even a day old yet, and it's already getting Apple into a lawsuit. Over in Germany, a music streaming service called SimFi filed an antitrust complaint related to iCloud. SimFi believes that its iPad app is not being approved by Apple because the SimFi app would compete with an Apple streaming music service. Considering Apple's iCloud didn't really have a streaming service, looks like SimFi could be wrong.
I think they should have waited to file their lawsuit till after the announcement.
Just a day. Like it was in the press release.
All right, finally, time for the randomizer.
Randomizer.
As all good random stories do, this one comes from the Daily News. 1,500 people showed up for a 16-year-old's birthday party in Germany after she forgot to set the privacy settings correct.
Yeah, so she basically decided to throw a party for not that many folks. Her parents, you know, she's underage. Her parents were going to be there chaperoning.
Sweet 16.
Yeah. And it turns out that 15,000 people said, yeah, we're coming. It kind of became this like Facebook meme type of a thing to say that you're coming to the party.
Not the first time this has happened.
No.
By the way. Yeah.
No, this is just, I mean, it happened in a really short span of time. Parents found out about it, said there's not going to be a party at all. Of the 15,000 people, still 1,500 people showed up. Like camped out on the sidewalk and had signs, you know, where is she?
Where is Tessa?
She left town.
Celebrating a birthday
anymore.
Is not a crime. Because they actually had 100 police there. The police said the crowd was very well behaved.
They're just a bunch of nice kids.
Police spokesman said the party was a hit.
Apparently, people bought presents.
Yeah.
She might have actually wanted to show up.
But she wasn't there. She was over at her grandparents hiding.
She was afraid.
I'm sure those
15,000 people.
Those people might have had fun just hanging out together, bonding over their experience for this kid's party.
Right to assemble. Right in front of your house.
Good stuff.
On your birthday.
And remember, those privacy settings can be very important when you want to keep your guest list to a...
to a small, manageable 15,000.
To something, you know, where you can actually feed them.
Time for a calendar.
All right. Amazon is now taking pre-orders for the authorized bio of Steve Jobs. Book won't be released until March 6th of 2012, but people are already lining up, obviously.
The one called iJobs.
I think it's iSteve.
Oh, hi, Steve. Whatever.
Hi, Jobs. Sounds
hi, Jobs sounds like a medical procedure.
Yeah. It is.
Sony E3 press conference is today at 5 p.m. Pacific, so we'll obviously be talking about it tomorrow. We'll make it in time for today's show. If you're wondering where is Nintendo in all of this E3 coverage, they've got a press conference at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning, Tuesday, June 7th. And HTC Evo 3D and Evo View 4G are both coming to Sprint on June 24th for $200 and $400, respectively.
All right, on to the voicemails, 260-TNT-SHOW. You can call and leave a message. We listen to them all, and we play the best. Then Martin made the cut today. He's got some comments about Moto Blur.
Go, Martin.
Hey, Martin. This is Martin in Tampa, Florida. Regarding the story about Moto Blur cataloging bad apps, doesn't that sound like something Google should be doing or should be built into Android? And, you know, again, show a similar warning. They don't have to violate their openness by preventing those apps from getting in the store in the first place. But showing a warning, I think, would be pretty nice. Just my thought. Bye.
Yeah, they do it on search, right? If you hit a phishing site, they give you a warning that says, you can go to this site if you want, but we think it's dangerous and we don't think you should. But click here if you want to continue. They could do that with apps.
But for Motorola, though, they have better access to the hardware. They know exactly what's going on with their battery life. They probably have hooks into, I guess, APIs that Google wouldn't. I mean, they wouldn't be able to access certain information on every phone, right?
Possibly. There possibly might be some advantages there. But I'm sure, I mean, Google's capable of this, right. Don't you think?
If they wanted to.
Yeah.
Could.
Right. I think they should want to. On to the emails, TNT at twit.tv. Joshua Caleb says, hey, in regarding to your discussion about Main Street Fairness Act that would require online retailers to charge tax based on the customer's location, I actually think this is a great idea. Here's why. Right now, there is, at least in Minnesota, and I can vouch in California as well, Joshua Caleb says, an obscure tax law that most people aren't aware of that states a person can spend $750 online tax-free on products, not services. Once you go above that amount, no matter by how much, you are then charged tax on the entire sum of your online purchases. Now, here's the problem. This is all self-reported. I have to keep a running tab on every dime I spend on products online that isn't taxed. I would love to have a federal law that would hopefully just clear up all this online taxation confusion, even if it means I pay a little more on Amazon.
Well, that's assuming the federal taxation scheme isn't as confusing as the state one.
Well, and that would be bad. But I do think that the taxation scheme for local tax is so confusing right now.
Right.
When you count catalogs and online and local sales tax, that there ought to be a standard change that says if you as a state are going to collect sales tax, you're going to collect it based on where the person lives, and that's it. That's the end of it. And I think it does need to be cleared up because it is ridiculously complicated.
Right now, it's like, well, what about Oregon? What about Texas? What about, you said California?
Yeah.
I mean, not everybody knows how laws work in other states. Next email from Jerome says, on episode 256, you read an email declaring that the analogy between the Boston Tea Party and the so-called hacktivists targeting Sony was flawed. The email made the case that the civil disobedience in general and the Boston Tea Party in particular are protests against a government, and Sony's not a government, and thus no attack on Sony could be civil disobedience. It's worth pointing out that tea thrown into the harbor in 1773 was not property of Parliament or the Crown. It was owned by the East India Company, which was one of the first corporations to be founded. The colonists targeted private property whose owners were benefiting from the unjust taxation and monopoly laws. Similarly, the argument goes that the hackers are targeting a private company who think to be benefiting from unjust intellectual property laws. It's worth noting that both the East India Company and Sony had considerable lobbying power and influence with the government, which they used to push for unjust laws in each case. Ayaz?
I've got nothing to say about that.
I think it's a great point. Thanks,
yeah,
Jerome.
Yeah, it's effectively the same stuff that's in Wikipedia. I mean, that's...
Well, but the folks who were saying like, oh, civil disobedience against Sony is not civil disobedience. Tea Party was civil disobedience, it was affecting a private company as well.
I think talking about this before. This is like an analogy thing that just spun out of control. So you guys can...
That's it. That's the end of this one. Ayaz is calling an end. Time, please.
No.
Yeah, Jerome
What's
does make a good
now?
Point, though. That's
I do.
Like,
I
the
think,
lines
I,
aren't
I agree
always very cut and dry, yeah. And it's important to remember
very gray.
That it wasn't in the 1700s either.
Bricks.twit.tv is very cut and dried. You buy a brick, your name or whatever you want goes up on the wall at the new Twit studio. How more cut and dried could that be?
You could even have a message engraved saying, you know, F you, Sony.
You
right
could have
it.
Long live the Tea Party, but it's not civil disobedience. Or, I hate the Dutch East India Company. Whatever, pretty much whatever you want.
Almost.
On a brick. helps us move into the studio faster. So go buy a brick if you haven't yet. It's really not that expensive. Bricks.twit.tv. We thank you if you have bought one or if you're going
to. And they're good looking bricks too. You'll be happy to be up there.
They are brick like.
We hope anyway.
You can even buy a replica for yourself.
Yeah.
It's pretty nifty. I did this when Busch Stadium was built in St. Louis.
Thing, you know?
Yeah.
You sink your bricks.
Bricks in two different spots.
Because bricks sink.
Bricks sink.
Local.
So do cement boots. That's it for this edition of Tech News Today. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. You can find us online at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, TNT@twit.tv, or you can give us a call and leave a message, 260-TNT-SHOW. One of these days I might pick up, but probably not. So just call, leave a message. Keep it under 30 seconds. Keep it concise and make it a good point, and we might play it on the show. See you tomorrow.